Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Ryan Soley. He's the songwriter, vocalist, and guitarist for the Portland, Oregon-based band The Builders and the Butchers. The group's latest album, its first in 4 years, Hell and High Water, is out now. In this conversation, Soley discusses the social and political climates in which the songs on Hell and High Water were conceived, how the band has navigated life as a touring outfit while having families, and what he hopes for the future of The Builders and the Butchers. That's Ryan Soley of The Builders and the Butchers on Into Music, coming up now. My sense is that a lot of this is kind of drawn from the way that the last, half a decade, the changes that we've seen in the world and the upsets and all of those things. Is that kind of where a lot of this material came from?
I would say more so than in previous records. It's, when you write songs, it's like your filter goes through like this thing and you're like, okay, I heard this thing and it got run through my weirdo filter of songwriting and it came out like this. So I can say, like, to me, the, several songs on the new record are a lot about, like, the conflict in the Middle East and our kind of social rot and decay of any kind of ethics or honesty or what. The way I look at it is like, how would you explain this? I have two kids and it's like really difficult to explain the way the world is today to kids. And when I was growing up, it seemed so simple. And now it's just so much more complicated and hard to suss out any kind of real information and just all these different things that are just challenges. And then like human connection is less and less. So yeah, it definitely is about that, but also like, these are Builders and Butchers songs. So it's not like a straight political, who's that wonderful guy who's doing the folk thing now? Jesse Wells kind of a situation where it's like on the nose. This is more metaphorical, but it is totally, over half the records, super political or I guess like social commentary.
And back, maybe 2020 or so, Portland was kind of this place where there were a lot of things erupting. This is your hometown. This is your place where you're raising kids. And oh my gosh.
Yeah, I would say two things with that. Yes, that is true. And we protested ourselves and were a part of that and had lots of friends get tear gassed and everything. That being said, the portrayal of Portland on the national media compared to what it is to live here is like just completely untrue. Like the section of town where like things were happening was maybe a 4-block by 4-block radius. And that was gnarly. And there was skirmishes and things outside of that, but like, it's a wonderful livable city and nobody's scared. There is a homeless problem, but so is there in every other major American city. It's just a little bit newer in Portland. We haven't had homeless issues before, but a bunch of gentrification and COVID happened. And then there you go. And then, fentanyl happened and then there you go. That's what happens, but it's not any worse than, we've traveled around enough to know, like you go to parts of San Francisco and parts of Baltimore and parts of DC and parts of LA and parts of a bunch of cities, parts of Chicago that you just don't go to. There isn't a part of Portland where I wouldn't go to. That you drive through and you're like, damn, this is kind of rough, but you're not like, don't ever go there. That's just not a thing. And the way like the, especially right-wing media makes it portray it as like a, this liberal bastion of hell. it's just not that way.
I mean, that's, I guess, the other thing with, thinking about this material and kind of the way things are, and you mentioned misinformation. It's like I was in Chicago last fall during that time when ICE was there, and there's all this horrible, you know, rhetoric about how bad it is. And all I saw was like families going to restaurants with their kids and having ice cream cones, you know.
It's complete and utter horseshit. It's just to make a narrative seem true. And the sad thing is, you know, a lot of people who live here get wrapped up in it and then they start seeing it, but it's just not, even people like, if you're right wing and you live here, you only see the bad things. And it's like, every city has bad things. Like Portland has such a killer like music and restaurant scene, and it's just an awesome city to live in. Every city has problems. I don't know. It's just nothing bad here any worse than anywhere else, in my opinion.
Well, and I think too, there's this thing of like people care about the world, and I think most of us do. Why would any of us willingly allow things to happen in their hometowns? And wouldn't we as caring people step in and prevent the worst of the worst?
Sure. Yes. I mean, I'd say that's a yes. And like, there's a lot of people who are community members who are not part of like the Portland City Council and this and that, who are doing incredible work. What is true is that this is just living in a very leftist city, and I'm a leftist person, but depending on your cause, you could think this is important and somebody else thinks this is important. And so a lot of times with people who are more progressively minded, getting everybody on the same page to help in the same way is like herding cats. You know, the right wing people tend to be like, here's, it's guns, God, and whatever, and the flag. And so that the lineup behind it, and liberals who are a little smarter understand gray areas and understand like, well, this is a problem and this is a problem. And so to coalesce around like all together, that's what's happening with ICE. But like a lot of other issues are like, well, your thing is conflicting with my thing. You should care about my thing. And it's tricky.
I find that so much more. Yeah. In just so many areas of life, whether it's like what we eat or the car we drive, where it's like, you're not doing that right.
Right. And it's like, okay, I can't feel bad about everything I do. The environment needs to be preserved. Okay. These are our core beliefs.
So that, I mean, that becomes a really complicated thing when you have children and
absolutely
you're trying to steer them through this world and trying to say, you know, there are still good things. If you do good, this can be rewarded, when there are so many contradictions to that notion.
Oh, totally. And like progressive people need to remember too, is that the people who disagree with us feel just as strongly, if not more strongly, that they're right. And so shaming them doesn't work, because they're like, well, I'm right. So why would I feel any shame about that? I know I'm right. So then how do you deal with somebody like that? And it's really, really difficult.
On some level, writing about it does allow some sort of navigation through it.
Yeah, I exactly. Like I, as a writer, I like to be a little bit opaque. I find songs that are telling you how and what to think exactly not very interesting, because there's only a certain percentage of people who will like be like, yeah, I think that. And if you already think that, then what's the point? That person, you're not doing anything. You're just saying like, yeah, we all believe the same thing. To me, it's more interesting to write from a place of like, what's like a concept that every single person, whatever your political stripe is, can relate to. And it's like grace and forgiveness and these kinds of things. And you know, it's so funny because it's so antithetical to what they do, and how they act is so antithetical to like, they all say they're big Jesus people. And I'm like, you're doing exactly the opposite if you read the words. Like, and you know, I don't believe one way or another. I'm just saying like, it's pretty funny. Like when you think about the way the leaders act and the way people act, this is so far from Abraham Lincoln that it's like laughable. You know what I mean? Like, as far as like a human who does the right thing, despite, you know, whatever, it's it's pretty interesting how far we have come away from that.
This is the first album in 4 years, but presumably it was never a case of like, I don't think we're going to make another record. It just took the time that it took.
Yeah, every record takes forever for us because there's multiple parents in the band. People have kind of like, everybody's in their mid to late 40s. And so people have, you know, their career and their job, and they can't, you can't just do the like working at Plaid Pantry or 7-Eleven and quit and go on tour and work at a pizza shop and quit. And, you know, that's not a thing anymore. So it just changes A, the time you have to be creative, and B, the time you have to like create the thing that you've written. And so it just takes a long time. So our records will probably come out every 3 to 4 years. And I don't ever want to stop, but it's never going to be every year the Builders come out with a new thing. Cause frankly, we, you know, don't have to, cause we're not up to, like, we don't tour like other bands. We just kind of play 20 shows a year and wherever makes sense. And then maybe a festival here or there. And every few years, Europe. So it's not like we're trying to take over the world or anything.
Can you talk about a little bit about that time when you all kind of recognize that things are changing? Like, you can't go out for 6 weeks and play punk squats.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a multitude of things. I'm in awe of people in their 40s and 50s who do. I'm like, Jesus, you're committed to this. And that's amazing. Number one, it's just, people get married and the financial reality of being married, and especially with kids, you just can't do that anymore. And then coupled with that, your body breaks down, you know, like even touring in your 30s destroys you. It's not a healthy lifestyle, and you're sleeping on a floor every night and trying to scuzz it out. And it's, there's parts of that that I would never change. And I loved every moment, but just the simple fact of like, my body is not what it was. I need to save myself for the stage to be able to do what I'd like to do on stage for an hour and 90 minutes a night. I can't be sleeping on a floor, and I can't be eating shitty fast food, and I can't be doing that lifestyle. So it's just a multitude of factors make it so you just have to change the way you do it.
So you have that sense of it has to change, but then also the recognition of like, we don't want to let this go because there really is something here. There's something good about what we have.
We all enjoy the band more when we do it moderately. Like, I think you start to go out for a month or whatever, and you start to get bitchy with each other, and you start to not get along, and you're just, you know, even if it's bigger tour or whatever, it's just, it's hard. And so everybody likes to do it, but everybody likes to do it to where it's not like destroying their life. That's the big thing. And you know, our band is really a second family. Like, we've grown so tight over the years that like, it's like seven brothers. There's a little bit of gripiness, but at the end of the day, like we really do love each other and love creating with each other and realize how unique it is to be such a long history with each other. It's not common.
No, not at all. I mean, I kind of have this joke that, you know, if a band makes it to 5 years, if the band were a person, that's like being middle-aged.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. And so this is our 21st year of doing this.
Yeah.
So do you remember kind of like the point where it changed and you started to recognize that there was longevity? It wasn't just like, I'll see you guys next month for the next gig, but it was actually like, oh, let's talk about next year, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's ebbed and flowed. And like, just to be totally honest, my interest in pushing it has ebbed and flowed. But there's always, I'd say that what's kept it, if you're asking like what made it kind of notch up from just a local band, is that, okay, so like we were here and we were lucky enough to be in the same city as this guy, Kevin French, who was a booking agent starting his booking agency, but he was kind of like a mid-level booker, and he had the National, the Decemberists, and the Walkmen were like his three big bands. And, you know, for a guy who's not on a major thing, that's a big deal. And so he got kind of scooped up by the Paradigm booking agency, but kind of kept us in the mix. So we ended up getting a ton of tours and a ton of shows in those early days where like we, you know, had no business, but because he was our booker, we did get those. And so that was a huge a huge help. And then simultaneously, we were working with a guy named Rich Holtzman, who was the manager for Portugal the Man. He managed us for a while. So he got us opportunities in Europe and different things. So between those two guys, really, really helped kind of like notch us up to being like a working kind of blue collar band, those things. So that's when we kind of realized we're like, oh, this is special. And, you know, just like, you know, you'd play a show and suddenly there'd be, you know, a few hundred people and you're like, huh. And then you'd play again a few months later, a few hundred people. And you're like, this is a different, there's a different interest in this than like, you know, what the bands that we've been in before. And, so, and you know, with the band, people have always just been like, it's cheesy to say, but like very happy at our shows. I don't know how to explain it. The vibes are good. And it feels like it's more about the audience than us. And that's something that's really easy to want to continue doing.
Yeah, that was the thing that when you were all coming through Wichita, it was the kind of the conversation of like, you have to go to this show because it's an experience you're not going to forget.
Yeah, I mean, I that's the goal. Not every show is like that, but that's the thing we're trying to achieve.
There's a certain longevity in that that's different than making records, because like a record is like the permanent thing. The live show is that interactive thing, and I guess I don't know. Maybe there's a certain freedom that comes with live performance to change things up and so forth that you don't get with records.
That's totally like, we don't, I would say, you know, here's a process to speak, kind of speak to that question. Like, we write the songs, I write the songs, then the guys add parts and we change them a little bit as we go. And, you know, it's a very collaborative process. And then we record them and we get to a place where we're happy with it. And I was like, okay, this is working and whatever. And we all kind of sign off on like, okay, this is at least something I like for the most part, which, you know, when you go through seven guys' opinion, it kind of like you avoid the landmines of this and that and the other and everybody's personality. So you're like, okay, if a song gets through that, it's like, at least it's good. Right. And then, you know, you record it and you release it and then you play it, you know, you start playing it. And like, I would say, and I've had conversations with the guys about this. I'm like, I don't know what the song is, maybe until we've played it 15 or 20 times. We're playing the parts, but like, then you do a little something extra and then so-and-so plays off that, you extend that part and it's loose, but then you're like, oh shit, this is what this song needs to be. And then the audience reacts, so using their response. And so it's like this really cool kind of cauldron of feedback and creativity. And that's where the real magic is in playing a song. And that, like, it could be different every night and, but it's, you know, the same song, verse, chorus, whatever, but like the little changes and that joy of feedback are like, okay, this audience is extra good, so we're going to extend this part. And I think that that's really something that comes from playing with each other for so long and getting like, being able to like, just read cues, like a head nod or like a whatever, this is going to go here. And it's just so much fun. And I love the idea, like Fugazi, are you familiar? Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would go up with no set list and just play and a nod or a thing and know exactly just based on instinct what the next song was or what they were going to do. And it's like this beautiful thing. It doesn't always work, but when it does, it's really, really cool.
Yeah. Wasn't that long ago I went to see a band and they suddenly decided that they were going to do like this song that they hadn't done in a while. So they're like talking to each other, like working through the chord progression, you know, and there was something really kind of special about that. Cause it was like, oh, wait a second. They're pausing to actually like have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not trying to be like so many bands you see and it's this polished slick. You could tell they do the same set every night with the same choreography and the same joke and the same this and the same that, and like, to me that's just death. Like I don't have any interest in that. And so like, one of my favorite memories, like what you said, this always happens in Europe, but somebody will request a song that's like a deep cut and we'll be like, let's just, you want to, and they'll be like, okay, like let's go to the audience, like this could be horrible and if it is, we'll just stop and do something else, but we're willing to take this chance with you if you're willing to hear something that might not be good. And most of the time people are like, yeah, give it a shot. And it's weird how you have a song you haven't played in 5 years and it just happens, and then you're like, holy shit, we did that. We could just do that. Like, you know.
That's so cool. Just in life to have anything like that where you get to share something with other people is amazing.
Well, it's exciting too to like walk the tightrope of like, we could fall, this could suck, but it's like really gratifying when you pull it off.
And of course you have an audience that's gonna support you either way, so you know.
Yeah.
You hope that they don't get the pitchforks out if you screw up, but yeah. Well, exactly. As we kind of start wrapping up, so it's possible now at this point in your career with, you know, more than 20 years as a band, a number of records, that this record is the one that somebody comes in and they enter the world of the band on. That has to be kind of a cool experience that there's still new audience to be found.
Yeah, I mean, there's as a somebody who loves, you know, music and indie music and punk, so many of my favorite records are like, you know, I'll hear about a band. A perfect example would be like Idols. You know, like I listened to an interview with the singer and another guy from Idols, and I was like, this seems like the kind of thing I would like. And then I entered in on like their fourth record, and I was like, shit, this is awesome. And that's the record I love. And like, that's not the record most people started with. And then you go back and you can like find the early, you know, so it's a fun way to just, I find that like any entry point to a band is good. And so you would hope that people have an open mind. The truth is, though, like there is, every band has a record that, you know, at least 50% of their fans, that's what they heard, and that's their entry point. And so that's just the way it goes.
Maybe a difficult question, but what do you hope for the future of the band?
Honestly, it's never changed for me. I just want to continue to write songs, play live, and be with my friends. Like it's always been the same. And so I want that 10 years and 20 years from now, if we could replicate what we've accomplished in the last 20 years, I would be extremely satisfied. I don't need to rule the world or make $1 million or have my song in a, you know, in a beer commercial or whatever, even though we have had our song in a beer commercial. But like all those things don't need to happen. It's more about just like continuing, not getting up our own butt about it and getting an ego about it where it's like, this is so important, we have to drop everything, but just continuing to create and try to bring, basically like the mission of the thing is just try to put a smile on people's faces and try to bring joy to people and try to connect with people. And, you know, it feels like I want to like never be self-important about, like we're the healing force of the universe or anything like that. Like, but it is a wonderful thing to be able to make people feel joy, yeah, and make people feel some freedom and make them feel like they're a part of something.
You've been listening to a conversation with Ryan Soley of The Builders and the Butchers. The group's latest LP, Hell and High Water, is out now. You can learn more about them at their official website, thebuildersandthebutchers.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson.